Now, just on the subject of the future, you have a new book that's just come out talking about the future of space exploration. You make the claim that that the future of space exploration won't be done by humans, but by robots. And that's, to some, might be a bit of a controversial claim, I suppose. Mm-hmm. What drove you to talk about and investigate this topic?
I think obviously it's a fascinating question. How do we explore our solar system, and of course in the very far future beyond, by actually sending probes or going there rather than just by looking through telescopes? And we know that humans have been to the moon, and lots of them are going in low Earth orbit in the space station. And there's always talk about will they go to Mars or even beyond? And the point we make is that the peak of human spaceflight was the Apollo moon landings, which are now 50 years ago. They were, of course, bankrolled hugely expensively by the Americans. 4% of the American federal budget at its peak was spent on the Apollo program. And it was done, of course, for political reasons, to beat the Russians. And I'm old enough to remember when Neil Armstrong, and that was only 12 years after the first Sputnik, the first thing that went into orbit at all. And I think many of us then expected that long before today, there would have been footprints on Mars. And there perhaps would have been if the expenditure had been maintained, but there was no motive, having beaten the Russians to the moon, to go on. And so NASA's expenditure now is about 0.5% of the American federal budget. But the most important change in the last 50 years, of course, has been the development of robotics and AI, which obviously are getting more sophisticated and are far cheaper to launch, and will soon have enough intelligence to be able to carry out research program. I mean, let me give an example that there have been various probes, as you know, sent to Mars. The American sent a probe called Curiosity about 10 years ago, which trundled very, very slowly across a Martian crater, moved very slowly because it encountered a rock in its path. It had to report back to base on Earth, as it were, to decide how to change course, and to send a signal from Mars to Earth and back again takes at least 10 minutes, depending on the orbital parameters. And so it moved very slowly. There's a later probe that landed last year called Perseverance. And that's got enough intelligence that if it encounters a rock, it can figure out for itself. Now, that's a first step. But 10 or 20 years from now, one can imagine that the probes that are sent to Mars will have enough AI to be able to do a bit of geology and decide which is a specially interesting location, where should they take their samples, etc. And of course, sending a robot to Mars is hundreds of times cheaper than sending humans, especially if you want to bring the humans back, because you've got to feed them for 200 days on a journey, and you've got to take all the equipment needed, the return journey and the rocket to take off for Mars and all that. So it's hugely more expensive. And moreover, of course, it's not much more difficult to send a robotic probe to one of the moons of Jupiter, which are further away and are also interesting because they are possible locations for some kind of life. That can be done, whereas the idea of humans going that far is, everyone would agree, rather unrealistic. And so our line is that if I was an American taxpayer, and I say my co-author is Don Goldsmith, who is an American, we wouldn't want to spend any taxpayers' money on human spaceflight, because it is hugely expensive, especially if you're risk-averse. And of course, if you are sending civilians with public support, you've got to make it as safe as possible. And the American space shuttle was launched 135 times, and it failed just twice. That's less than a 2% failure rate. But each of those failures was a big national trauma because they presented it as safe routine tourism. They sent up a woman school teacher and all that. So this is a big trauma. So our line is that that sort of spaceflight is too expensive, and there's no purpose in it, really. The robots can do things better. But we should cheer on these billionaires if they want to spend their money or get sponsorship. to send people into space. There are two reasons for that. The one reason, obviously, is that's not public money. But the second reason is that they can afford to take higher risks and do a cut price, riskier project than a government could impose on civilians. And there are, of course, lots of people who will be prepared to accept a much higher risk of 10% or so for a thrill-seeking trip into space. And so we hope that there will be private ventures into space and perhaps even to Mars. There are many people who go with a one-way trip. In fact, Elon Musk himself has said that he would like to die on Mars, but not on impact. And he might manage that. He's 50 years old now. So in 40 years' time, when he's 90, what a way to go. And so maybe he will go. But although we think that there will be a colony of people on Mars, extreme thrill seekers, the kind of people who go to the South Pole, etc., we don't think that there will be mass migration to Mars. And here we strongly disagree with Elon Musk and with my late colleague, Stephen Hawking, who talked about mass emigration to Mars to avoid the Earth's problems. We think that's a dangerous delusion because we've got to solve Earth's problems here. Dealing with climate change is tough, but it's a doddle compared to terraforming Mars. There's no planet B for ordinary risk-averse people. Space is something for adventurers. But we also discuss in our book the upside of having these pioneers on Mars. And that's the following, that they will clearly be ill-adapted to Mars, the wrong atmosphere, the wrong gravity, etc. And they will want to use all the technology of genetic modification and cyborg technology and all that in order to adapt themselves or their descendants to this hostile environment. Now, those techniques will, we hope, be regulated here on Earth for ethical reasons and prudential reasons. But these guys are away from the regulators and they've got a stronger motive to adapt. And so if there are some people who are on Mars and never come back, then they will be the precursors of a post-human species, which they will evolve into something better adapted to them. And of course, will that be flesh and blood, or will they download into electronic entities? We don't know. In the latter case, they will be near immortal, and the electronic intelligences wouldn't want to be on a planet at all. They would need an atmosphere. They might prefer zero G. And if they're immortal, they wouldn't be daunted by an interstellar voyage. So that could be the beginning of expansion of our remote descendants beyond the solar system. And that's a very long-term prospect. But our point is that that could be pioneered by these crazy adventurers who go to Mars, because they will have every incentive and freedom for regulators to make these changes. And these changes would be about 1,000 times faster than Darwinian changes, because Darwinian evolution is, of course, changing things, but it takes hundreds of thousands of years to give rise to a different mammalian species, typically. And so our changes would be very slow. We're not very different from people 50,000 years ago, whereas this could happen on a sort of technological timescale of centuries or less. So this far future evolution could be quick. And that leads to another point, which I try to make as an astronomer, because I think it's the context where astronomers bring a special perspective to bear. I mean, most people are now aware of the fact that we are the outcome of 3.5 or 4 billion years of evolution in the first protozoa. Most people, I suspect, think of us as the culmination of evolution, the top of the tree. And no astronomer can believe that. It's one thing we know as astronomers is that the future lying ahead is longer than the past. The sun's been shining for 4.5 billion years since the Earth first formed, but it'll be about 6 billion more years before the sun flares up and dies. And the expanding universe may go on far longer, maybe forever. I like to quote Woody Allen, who says, eternity is very long, especially towards the end. And so we should think of ourselves as maybe not even a halfway stage in the emergence of wonderful complexity and intelligence in the universe. And if evolution gets started elsewhere, it won't proceed exactly in synchrony. That means that if there were any aliens out in space, who we might eventually find evidence for, in terms of aliens, they're most unlikely to be like us or flesh and blood. They're far more likely to be some electronic entities, which are the descendants of some flesh and blood civilization that died out long ago on some other planet. And so we've no idea what to look for, but there could be a huge variety of entities out there, which are in some senses more advanced than human brains, and may have a deep understanding of phenomena that we can not even become aware of.
Wow. Yeah, I suppose we would, if I may make a Star Trek reference, less Vulcan, more Borg is what we can expect out in the stars.
Right.
I think that's a really great, good place to end it.